Oh, what up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. We are back with episode number 177. Today, we're going to be smoking and talking about UFC 299, Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera 2. We're going to be talking about Francis Ngannou versus Anthony Joshua. We're going to be recapping some Bellator PFL action we watched. Let's get into it, Paul, with the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
All right, so this week we have some lemon essence. This is made by Firestar.
Yeah.
This one's coming in at a 30.9 THC. It's a hybrid, and yeah, it's pretty fucking fire.
Can't get a lot of strain genetic information on there, but
yeah, it seems like really it's a newer, newer strain.
Terps are really high. Flavor's good. Firestar, I've smoked a bit of their weed here across Vegas, and dude, I got this at Nevada Made for only $25 an eighth.
That's not bad at all. It's pretty much like, and we talked about this more like back when legalization was first coming around, that like these dispensaries and a lot of these places were going to get, you know, a lot cheaper over time, and I feel like we're finally getting there where things are like kind of where street prices were before legalization.
Bro, absolutely. And man, there is absolutely no reason. When you look at the details on this weed and you smoke it, there is no reason why you should pay any more than this for weed. Like, yeah, this same store has got eights by like Polaris for $55.
Yeah, no thanks.
That weed is not $30 worth more, $30 more than this weed.
No fucking way.
Absolutely. It's impossible.
Yeah,
it's absolutely impossible.
And I do think you kind of see some of these like the original, I'd say like five dispensaries are the ones that are like trying to hold on to those prices.
Yeah.
But a lot of like the newer ones that are popping up are kind of, you know, tried to change at least the average price in the market, I'd say.
Bro, I bought this other brand a couple weeks ago called Hustler's Ambition. I'd never seen them before. I just tried it. It was 20 and 8th. The shit was fine, dude.
Yeah.
Tasted good. It was like 22% THC. It was cured right. Fucking buds were great, bro. No reason to fucking come out here to visit Vegas and sit here and pay $55, $50 for an eighth before tax. You're walking out of here paying $65-$70 for fucking an eighth of weed. It's crazy. This with a tax was $30, man.
Well, that's
worth
also
it all day.
That's another thing you'll see, too, is like a lot of those dispensaries that are closer to the strip are the ones that are trying to hike the price up. All like the ones off Highland, like freaking Planet 13
and Reef.
Reef,
yeah.
And like a lot of those ones that are like kind of catering more to a lot of the tourists and stuff like that are the ones that are like still keeping their prices. But a lot of like your more local, kind of more in the neighborhood sides of Vegas are the ones that are, you know, actually coming correct.
Yeah, there's no reason to have a fancy fucking weed store. I mean, once you get past the initial fun thing, I mean, it looks cool, but it's like, why would you go to a liquor store that was super fancy and charged you more for the fanciness of the store versus if you can get the exact same liquor at the corner store for cheaper?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, after the initial fun of being 21, you're like, oh, I'm in the liquor store. Like, you get over that, oh, weed is legal. Ain't no reason to go spend that much money somewhere, man. It's just not.
Well,
I don't even go
in
the fucking store anymore, dude.
I think that's kind of the crowd they cater to also, like,
for sure,
more than the local scene. Because it's like, they're kind of like what you just said, the whole weed is legal thing.
Yeah,
like, people,
they can't believe they're
like,
in a store
yeah.
and sells weed. It's so crazy. And then you live here, it's like, bro, I lived in Colorado before here, and it was legal. Then I moved here, and it's been like a fucking decade. It's like between the two, it's like I'm good, dude. I'm cool. It's like routine.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, all right. So let's dive in. So
dude, let's start off with the obvious. I want to say before we even talk about it, dude, 299 is a better card than UFC 300.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The fuck is wrong with the UFC?
I mean, I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong per se. But I'll kind of talk something. I was talking to you about the other night. Is I just honestly feel that we have so many champions in this UFC that we have now that are just not as active as the ones we had before. Like, a lot of people, you know, at the end of his, you know, title reign, gave Izzy a lot of flack because all the shit he was doing and everything. And you could like him, love him, or, you know, anything in between. But one thing that the dude did was fight 3-4 times a year, zero questions asked. Volkanovski, no longer the champion. He was fighting a cool 3-4 times a year, no questions asked. Yeah. You know, a lot of these guys that are now champions are just not willing, and Sean O'Malley being one of them as well, are just not willing to, I don't know, like, fully commit themselves to the company. And I get why in some circumstances, but there's just like, I don't know, there's just like this, there's just like this new mentality where like guys are like, as soon as they get to the title, now it's their turn to pick and choose when they want to fight.
Well, it's because the UFC pays them so shitty on all fucking way up there. They become paranoid about losing it, paranoid about getting a new deal because they can't afford to go back to that shit before.
Yeah.
I mean, the UFC is still putting these guys in the apex for
fuck's sake. Aljamain Sterling, too. Aljamain Sterling used to fucking fight 3-4 times a year, too. Yeah. Like, they're just Usman, like.
Now we got the guys that don't do anything.
Yeah.
Or so it seems. But O'Malley is fighting this weekend. We got 299. He's headlining against Chito Vera, too. The whole card, top to bottom, is fucking solid.
Yeah, best card of the year, for sure. Could turn out to be the best card of the last few years if it lives up to the possibility of what this whole card could be. You know, you got at least, what, 10 of the fights on here are with guys who are ranked or on the verge of being in the top 10.
Well, let's pick out a few that stand out here for their implications in the divisions. Like, how about Curtis Blaydes versus Almeida at the heavyweight?
Yeah, so this one's kind of interesting because heavyweight is kind of in this weird spot where you're waiting for the Jones-Stipe thing to go off or on, and then, you know, Aspinall is almost kind of like the sitting champion who is going to continue to defend his interim heavyweight championship until Jones and them get it all figured out. And this ultimately could be the next fight for him, where you got Blaydes, who he had that weird kind of
injury. Yeah, I mean, he got fucked up fighting Almeida. Yeah. Or not Almeida, I'm sorry, Aspinall.
Yeah.
You know, like, his fucking knee got fucked up. Aspinall gets the quick TKO victory.
But no, it's all the way around. Loss.
Or right. Aspinall's knee gets, whatever.
Yeah. But, like, that was the only real, like, blemish on Aspinall's, like, rise up.
Yeah, so that's now, right. Blaydes lost to Pavlovich.
Yeah, and Blaydes kind of just been like that right now, though. Blaydes, who was first in Ngannou, kind of knocked him out of it, and then Lewis put him to sleep. And then he puts a couple wins together. Now then he loses to Pavlovich. And it's just like, that just kind of seems like it's the trend of his career going forward. And so I kind of do hope that Almeida pulls this out, to be honest.
Dude, Almeida's going to fuck him up, dude. I guarantee you. Almeida's going to come right out there, and he's going to light this fool up. I'm just feeling it. Curtis Blaydes' time is over. I just don't.
Almeida's kind of an interesting individual because he's a very undersized heavyweight. But his grappling is so high level and his jiu-jitsu is fucking ridiculous that anytime someone who maybe is like physically daunting, he just takes him down and is like, yeah, let's see how tall you are laying down, motherfucker. You
know what I mean? That's where I think Blaydes is going to run into trouble. I think this is somebody that can handle the takedown attempts from Blaydes and probably get some reversals and uses jiu-jitsu to get the victory here.
Yeah.
I'm not sensing a knockout win for Almeida, although it is possible. It's heavyweight.
It's possible.
But Almeida, I really think he's going to get a reversal on a takedown, get better position, and he's going to choke Blaydes out.
That's the thing, though, that I feel like also with Blaydes is he's got good wrestling, but he's never had, like, great jiu-jitsu or great
not at all.
Like,
and I like the dude, but I'm a little tired of seeing these same faces at heavyweight.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sick of them all fighting each other. Enough.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Sorry, Curtis.
And Almeida's freaking, he's a dog. He's undefeated. He's got 14 first-round finishes.
Yeah, undefeated in the UFC. He is 20-2 overall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, he's won, what, 6 fights in the UFC so far? And he's just like that new breed, kind of what you're talking about. You know, the fresh face that hopefully we get to see rise in the ranks.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I'm predicting a pretty quick victory for him. I'm thinking second-round submission.
I could rock with that, too.
Or you know, a submission to do a choke is what I'm leaning, but we'll see. We'll see, and I think that's the best thing that could happen at heavyweight because we got to get some action going here while Jones is out, while Stipe is, while that fight's still marinating. It's not going anywhere. It's going to happen. Aspinall's accepted it. Everybody's on board. I have no problems with Aspinall defending that fucking interim belt in this circumstance. Do it, whatever. Let's get him a contender. Though, let's get that fight going.
Interesting, kind of taking a step back here, but during that PFL card, Jones jumped on the mic, and it seems like some of Aspinall's shit-talking might be working. Because now he's saying that he's going to beat Aspinall's ass, he's going to beat Stipe, and then he's gonna somehow, some way, fight Francis.
I mean, it is what it is. John was also looking pretty rotund.
I saw that, too.
Thing. Like, you could tell in his little Saudi robe get-up, he was still fucking fat. Like, yeah, even Francis was like, you're fat, homie.
He also got surgery, though, so how much could he be really, like, working out, you know?
It's true.
Supposedly, he got, like, two surgeries. The what was it, a pec injury or something like that?
Yeah.
But then I guess he had, like, a shoulder surgery also to get his shoulder repaired. So maybe he had some lingering issues. And, you know, hopefully we get that figured out soon, though.
Yeah, yeah. I think Curtis Blaydes is getting knocked out of that conversation while Almeida is going to step up here.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, bouncing back down to some much smaller dudes, we got some 135-pounders coming in with Peter Yan and fucking Song Yadong going.
Yeah, that's going to be a banger.
That's a banger right there.
Song Yadong's been one of those sleeper guys in the division. Like, bantamweight is so fucking stacked. There's just so many guys that could really beat anybody on any day, and I feel like Song Yadong's one of those. Like, he's pretty well-rounded.
His only loss in his last five fights is to Corey Sandhagen, which is no
And it was a close
right
fight.
There.
That was a close. Wild fight.
Whereas, let's be honest here, Peter Yan, he's in a must-win situation here, in my opinion. I mean, he has won exactly one of his last five fights, which was, ironically, a bit against Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's lost to Vashali, he's lost to O'Malley, he's lost to Sterling twice. And Sandhagen in between those two. It was one victory.
And the Merab fight, too, he just got completely shut down, like completely embarrassed by Merab to the point where, I don't know, like, kind of like what you said, this is a must win for him. Like, if he doesn't come out here and put on not only a win, but something, you know, with a little bit of,
a little extra
on it.
Here.
Yeah, like, things aren't looking great for him.
The problem is Song Yadong's too tough for that statement. Song Yadong's going to beat him down.
Think so?
Yep.
That's a pretty good pick, I think. I think he's probably, not betting-wise, the best underdog, but I think he, like, just stylistically and like, just based on what we've seen in the past, I think that Song Yadong's probably the best underdog going into this weekend.
Yeah, he's only a slight underdog at that. I mean, some of the best odds you can get him at right now are plus 110, while we've got Petr Yan at around minus 120 to minus 130.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not like betting wise. I just mean like stylistically.
Yeah,
like
stylistically.
He's probably the best.
I'm feeling it. Yeah. I think Petr Yan is just the decline. Just came like people figured out how to beat him, and I think it's there. And I think Yadong's going to do it.
And it's kind of something that's happened at this division too. It's like when they've had these champions that have come in and looked so dominant on their way to the belt, and when they get it, it's like this. Once they lose it, it's just like steady decline and disappearance. Like, saw that with Marlon Moraes. We saw that with Cejudo. We saw that with, I guess, Sterling, but he's moving to another weight class. So that's kind of one that's still pending. But there's just this, because I think it's such a tough division, and I think when you get up there, you know, and you have to fight all these killers to get there.
Oh, yeah.
And then once you get there and maybe win a couple, your body's just gone through so many wars that it's kind of tough to just get up for all these fights after they no longer have that same significance that the title fights had.
Yeah, absolutely. We got Gilbert Burns facing Jack Della Maldonada, who's just on a fucking roll.
Yeah.
I mean,
what if there's someone that knows how to stop people on a roll, it is Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, Gilbert Burns come in and fuck you up, but I don't know, man. He's given up 10 years here in age.
It's now or never for Burns if he's going to do anything in this division. He's got to do something now.
Jack lands a lot of strikes per minute, man.
Yeah,
he's over tough. Seven. That is very tough.
Think did he get his nose fixed yet, or does it still look like shit?
I have no idea.
That dude's nose is fucking.
You know, he's coming off that win over Kevin Holland. Yep. He's on quite the streak. Gilbert Burns is another one that I just feel his time is also at end. I feel like we're at a point in the UFC where we're about to see a lot of turnover as far as these older guys, because they're all right on that cusp.
We've got a lot of these young guys coming up. I was looking at this graphic of like all the guys that are 35 and above right now.
Man.
And it was like all the people of like the whole, I'd say the 2015 to 2024 now, mm-hmm. like era of the UFC is all coming to like there. It's kind of like, remember when those like Ultimate Fighter guys like all were like real big, like the like seasons 1 through 5 were real, like a lot of them turned out to be champions and great fighters and put on great fights. But then like as it's just the sport, like as you see the one, you know, generation of guys, it's kind of the end of that generation. Yeah. Like Volk, Jones, you know, Burns is in there.
Dude, Volk is done.
Ferguson. I don't think he's not. I don't think he's done either, but
I'm saying he is done.
Oh, he is
Volkanovski is done. I hate to say it, but he fucked up his career with that shit.
Yeah, he might have.
He fucked it up, man. He shouldn't have taken that second Makhachev fight. He had no... You can say no to the UFC, you motherfuckers. You can say no. What good did that do for him? Nothing. It diminished his first fucking fight.
Yeah.
And then he didn't take a big enough break before he fought Topira. And it got smoked again. Now you're coming up back-to-back KOs like that? Those were nasty, man.
Yeah.
Those are fucking nasty. And you're 36,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have that time like these fucking heavyweights do. No. You don't have that little like, oh, he's 36, he's still going to go 3 years. Like,
although the only pushback I'll give you on that is that Volkanovski is one of those guys who started MMA later in life.
True.
So he doesn't necessarily have exactly the same. But he does, I mean, two knockouts back
to
back.
Dude, would he get knocked out if he hadn't taken that second Makhachev fight?
That's a good question.
Let's say he just let's just say that never happens and he fights Topuria again. Is it the same fucking fight?
That's a good question.
Because he was looking good right until all of a sudden he was asleep. I was like, damn, Volk looks great. Oh, Volk's asleep.
I think where he could answer that question would be him taking a year off. Like, take the rest of this year off.
Ooh, come back at 37?
He's got it, bro. Here's the thing. The only reason I say that is you got to give your brain enough time to... you know, heal from trauma. Because at the end of the day, people don't realize that. It's like they see these dominant champions get knocked out, and they're just like, oh, it's cool, just get right back in and do it again.
No, man, that's trauma. That's when you're trauma, older like that, too, it's even worse. And he might have been new to MMA later in life, but he was playing rugby before at a professional level, and that's traumatic on your brain. Yeah. Absolutely. You're getting hit just as hard as football in a lot of cases out there.
Mm-hmm.
With a lot less fucking protective equipment on you.
And that's the thing, too. So now you're going into... this, like, whole next chapter of, I guess, the end of your career. How do you want to be seen in the end? You know, how do you want to go out is what a lot of these guys. And I think another one that we're going to talk about in a second is, like, Dustin Poirier is kind of in that same place, too, where it's, like, you've been in these great title fights. You've been in these great scenarios. You've won some, lose some. But when you take some of these, like, real devastating knockouts and – there's a difference between getting like a flash TKO and getting flatlined, and when guys get flatlined, it's just hard to just look at Kamaru Usman, same perfect example as well. It's like there's just sometimes when you get shut off like that, it's just so devastating for your not only psyche but how you fight in general,
because
you don't want that to happen again.
Look at Usman when he came back after Leon Edwards. I feel that played into a part of it right there, too, in that second fight.
He was gun-shy, for sure.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think Volk was a little gun-shy in that fight, too. For obviously the right reasons.
Well, but anyways, I think Gilbert Burns is right at that point, too, where he's going to fall off. I think he's going to lose this fight to Jack Della Maldonado. I have a hard time with his last name.
Madalena.
I get tongue-tied.
But, yeah, I think Burns is durable, so I don't think he'll get knocked out, but I do think he probably
will. He's going to lose a very lopsided decision. He's going to get outstruck 6 ways from fucking Sunday in this fight.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's what's happening in the next fight, which has a lot of fucking hype behind it, I feel. Yeah. Like Kevin Holland versus Michael Venom Page. I mean,
the people's main event, in my opinion.
This is a fight right here, but I don't think it's the fight that a lot of people expect.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, I think. So, Venom Page, he's got a lot of question marks coming into this fight, I would say. Because, you know, he's 21-2 in his career. And Bellator, yeah, and a little bit over in the UK. And he faced some real tough guys. And his two losses are not, outside of that, the KO that he took, like, he proved he could come back after that and that it wasn't something that was going to, like...
It was De Lima, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he lost a real close decision to Logan Storley. So, like, those fights aren't really, like, super...
He didn't get blown out the water, yeah, or, quote-unquote, exposed or none of that shit.
Yeah. So, coming into this fight, you got to ask yourself, like, is this one of the products that the UFC's brought in from Bellator that is going to show themselves to be ready and just was waiting in the wings? Or is this something that Bellator was like, we don't really have much more for you, and he didn't really have much more for them either, and they kind of just parted ways, and the UFC saw him as a built commodity, and they decided to bring him in?
I don't know about any of that, but what I think I do have a pretty good feeling about is Michael Venom Page is going to come in here and absolutely destroy Kevin Holland.
You think so?
He can put that motherfucker down. And I love Kevin Holland, dude. Kevin's a good fighter. But there's a reason that Kevin Holland's average fight time is 11 minutes and MVP's average fight time is 2 minutes.
That's true.
And it's not all fighting cans and Bellator. That doesn't hold up for fucking 18 fights.
Yeah, he's had some big wins. But the only pushback I have on that also is when MVP has fought other strikers in the past, he's chose to wrestle them. Like, when you watch, like, his fight with Paul Daly, where he knew Paul Daly had, you know, the power to put him out, he chose to more or less try to grapple with him. And I feel like a lot of those, like, matchups where he's been against other high-level strikers, he's just more willing to do some of that, like, grappling.
Well, here's the other two stats I think that are really going to play into effect right here. That is the strikes absorbed per minute. For Kevin Holland, it's a little over 3. You know what it is for MVP?
0.45%.
Less than half,
yeah,
of the strike
such a weird
per minute.
Style.
And striking accuracy, 55% for Kevin Holland, 77%. For MVP, and I think that these stats are going... I mean, stats don't tell the whole story of a fucking fight. It's not about statistics, but I think in this particular case for these two guys, their strength is striking.
Yeah.
We all know Kevin Holland don't want to wrestle you. I mean, he about retired after the Chimaev fight.
Yeah. It'd be very interesting to see how Kevin Holland wears MVP's punches.
Because he just got beat by Jack. We were talking about Jack Maldonado.
Yeah.
He just... Like we were talking, he averages 7 strikes per minute. That's 3 more than MVP. MVP is only at 4.5 strikes per minute.
But I do think the curveball that MVP throws into all these guys is his style is unlike any other striker in the UFC. And the only one you could really maybe compare it to is Wonderboy. And Wonderboy whipped on Kevin Holland when they were on their feet. So it's just so interesting when you have, like, these karate point fighter guys because, like, kind of alluding to what you said before with that 2 minute average fight time, the way he fights is not an average striker who, you know, sets up their jab and then mm-hmm. finds what they're gonna find. He 90% of the fight is sitting there with his hands down, rocking back and forth, and looking for an opening.
He even did that in BKFC.
I mean,
much to his detriment. Actually, because that's a different sport, but kudos to him for trying this shit. You know what I mean? Fighting his fight.
And I don't really feel like that fight matters that much.
No,
on
I don't
think
record,
to be honest. Like, people, I feel like a lot of people have put stock into that loss.
Nah.
And I'm just like, his style's not made for bare knuckle. Mm-hmm. Like,
and he didn't try bare knuckle fighting style. Like, if he was going to stick with bare knuckle, I guarantee you he would change his style up because you can't win that way over there.
Yeah.
It's just different.
It's not
like
only
you don't have the openings
just,
with your feet and the takedowns and the other things that you're going to have in MMA. You only got those hands, and you just can't do it that way.
Well, and I do think
another
thing that is super underrated in MVP's game is his kicks are phenomenal.
Absolutely.
He has great kicks. And I think that could be the X factor in this fight, because I think Kevin Holland and him probably have very similar hands, like as far as like power. But I think the difference is that freaking MVP is so versatile in his like striking game. The only person I can probably ever compare him to in the UFC is probably Anderson Silva. Yeah. Like he has a very similar game to Anderson, where he's gonna pick you apart on the feet, and then he's gonna make you not purposely look stupid, but he very easily could make you look stupid. Dude, speaking of MVP, remember when he fucking leg kicked that dude in the knee and fucking caved his knee in?
Yes.
That was the nastiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, that was fucking horrible.
And then he caved in fucking homeboy's skull head. Too.
Yeah.
Cyborg.
Cyborg's head, yeah. That was nasty, bro. Yeah. No, he's gonna light Kevin Holland up. This ain't even gonna be a. This is gonna be maybe two rounds, maybe.
Damn.
That's what I think. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but that's what I'm on.
I think people are giving Kevin Holland the benefit of the doubt because he's the UFC guy going against the Bellator guy. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, that's he can't be that great. Too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
MVP's not getting the shine because of Bellator and because of the Mike Perry loss.
Yeah, but I don't think
and that doesn't have shit matter. To do with shit.
Yeah.
No, I don't have nothing to do with a damn thing.
Neither of those matter at all.
He's going to come out of there and people are going to be talking about MVP.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I feel like that's why I was saying earlier. I feel like this is like the people's main event. Although yeah. The main event is great, I'm saying like this is probably gonna be like knockout of the night, fight of the night opportunity here.
Well, now we're getting up near the top of the card. You were mentioning him earlier, but we got Dustin Poirier making a comeback in a fight. He initially was like, "No, I'm not gonna do." Then he changed his tune a couple of days later.
Yeah.
But that's Benoit St. Denis, who seems to be the truth, man. His 13-1 record is legit.
I heard people calling him BSD now. That's what I'll call him. That's way easier than saying his real name.
Yeah, that's true.
Benoit St. Denis, Jesus.
But we do have, you know, we got fucking Poirier. He's getting older. He's lost two of his last three.
In his last fight, he got fucking shadow realmed by Gaethje.
I think he's got a tough road ahead of him in this fight. And I'm not too mad about that. I like Dustin Poirier, but like we were talking about changes at heavyweight, lightweight's in dire need of new blood. Mm-hmm. Like, we cannot keep giving title shots to Justin Gaethje, fucking...
Even Connor.
Like Connor, Poirier, fucking Connor. Dustin Poirier, fucking Michael Chandler. Can we stop? Can we just...
That's why I feel like there's a couple blood. Guys. There's fucking a couple guys the in there five right guys now.
And Charles yeah. Oliveira.
Even Oliveira, I don't really have a ton of like.
Like God bless them all. I'm just tired of seeing them all. Just it's just them. Like, can we get somebody fucking new?
I think Benoit is going to be the new one. He's a tough motherfucker.
Yeah, I think he's going to come in and win this fight too.
I was looking I'm at it just the, to see I'm how long all the it's new been, names. But July of last year too, it'll be what the so. About 6 months since he got shadow roamed like that.
He getting up there. I'm just not feeling it. I like Dustin, but I feel like he's at the same point I was saying about Dustin or Gilbert Burns. And yeah. A lot of these guys, he's another guy that's right there that we were just talking about. That's on that precipice facing a fucking young murderer coming up the fucking ranks.
But I'll give...
And he's coming off getting just, like you said.
I'll give Poirier credit, though. In the past, last couple years... He's had a couple fights like this where we've been like, okay, he's done. This is the end of his run. And then he has, like, the best fucking performance of his career.
Yeah, yeah, it's so true.
This could also be that. You can't count him out. He has – his hands are fucking lethal. When he's on point, when Dustin Poirier shows up and he's landing and he's, like, gets in that flow state that he gets in sometimes. Yeah, like,
his striking's great.
The dude's fucking
– his hands lightning. Are real nice.
So, I don't know. But, I agree. I kind of want that new blood in the division, but I'm not quite ready to count Poirier out, to be honest.
I mean, the only person he's beat, not named McGregor, in quite some time is Chandler. And that was a...
I thought he beat the shit out of Chandler.
Yeah, that was an ass-whooping, I was going to say.
Okay, I thought you said that was a close fight. No, I was no, like, no, I already beat that the was fuck out of Chandler. Yeah, and I mean, it's... and right before the McGregor fight, the Hooker fight was kind of what I was alluding to before. Because remember, going into that Hooker fight, everyone was like, why'd you take this fight? This guy's way ranked below you and all this shit. He's washed, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then he beat the fuck out of Hooker.
Well, you picking Poirier on that shit?
I'm kind of going back and forth. Is it five rounds?
No. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, Dustin Poirier is a plus 170 underdog, and that's probably one of the better bets on the fucking card, honestly. If you're looking for an underdog to bet on, plus 170. I mean, that's the highest you can get across, you know, we're looking at like five or six different ones, but that's on DraftKings right now. Benoit St. Denis is minus 205.
He's got a cool nickname, too, God of War. That's pretty fucking sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just like a crazy step up in competition, though, if you look at fucking St. Denis' record.
Yeah, what's got to happen?
He goes from Thiago Moises, Matt Frivola, to Dustin Poirier. That's pretty nuts.
Yeah, like, well,
he looked great in the Matt Frivola fight, don't get me wrong, but these motherfuckers, they're feeding him.
I want
him
to win. I like Dustin, but for the same reason, I'm tired of these old heads in here fucking the same names. I don't want to see Dustin fight for another title. I'm sorry. Sorry, Poirier fans. I need just new shit. We need new shit. UFC's stale as fuck, man. God damn, the UFC is stale.
You got Holloway moving to 55 now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll be talking about that one as that gets closer, but I don't know. At least he looks a little more solid.
Dude, he looks jacked. What the fuck?
That's what he should have done before when Poirier beat his ass. He was too small.
Fucking Max is juicing up, bro. No,
right.
I'm just kidding. He does look huge, though. But that's the thing, is like, I don't know. Even if St. Denis comes out in this fight and puts on, like, a great performance against Poirier, it's still going to take, like, one or two more fights before they give him Islam.
Yeah. Islam, dude, he ain't never getting there. Islam fights once a fucking year, twice if we're lucky.
Yeah.
And we're going to see him fight Gaethje again. Like, okay, cool. I mean,
well, you never
Gaethje, well, I know, I said again just because I had my Nurmagomedov. It's like,
I think Gaethje beats him, though.
I don't know. I remember all the talk how Gaethje was a guy to beat Nurmagomedov, too, because that magic wrestling that we used to hear so much about.
Yeah.
Fucking Gaethje's wrestling is just like Nate Diaz's boxing, bro. It's fucking wolf tickets, dude. Like, I don't believe it anymore. Like, bullshit. Those are gym stories, dude. I know you got accolades. At least Gaethje has accolades, you know, whereas Diaz was just talking out his goddamn ass for all these years. As much as I fucking love that dude, we got to keep it real. You can't box, bro. But Gaethje, we never see him wrestle. Ever, never, ever. How's he going to fuck with Islam Makhachev? I don't know. We'll see.
I think Islam is a lot more willing to stand and throw than Khabib ever was.
Yeah. We'll see. He got his hands full with Max Holloway's suddenly bigger ass.
Dude, I know. We'll that's going to be... I mean, I know we're going to talk about that probably, what's that, two, 3 weeks from now?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's like... That's a really interesting fight to me. So, let's talk about the main...
Yeah, we got the main event.
We got Benoit. I guess I'll take for you. I think the only way Poirier wins, though, is by decision. I don't think he finishes it.
No, probably not.
But, yeah, so the main event, the rematch, we got Sean O'Malley taking on Chito Vera.
Chito's one of the biggest underdogs. I mean, DraftKings got him plus 225. I mean,
I'd take that.
I would take that all day. Well, that's because I think he's going to win, too. I think he's got a solid path to victory here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to watch out for the straight punches of Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley's got a marvelous straight game, like his 1-2, and Vera tends to throw looping punches, and I'm always one to say fighters should throw straight punches, especially with all these guys always throwing all the hooks and everything, but Vera's got that nasty little teep kick right to the gut.
I was just going to say that. I think the biggest thing, the difference in the two like guys here is I think Sean is more like accurate finesse, and like Chito likes to make it a little dirty. He likes you know, get in the clinch, throw strikes, you know.
And once Chito made the decision that he wasn't going to get bullied around anymore and he was going to be a fucking pressure fighter, period.
Yeah. It's that's really dangerous against Sean, though, too.
It is. But I think he's the guy that can do it. He was in there before. I think he's got that, even though it was a short one round, you know, with the injury and all. I haven't seen the dog in O'Malley yet.
Okay.
We've seen the dog in Cheeto.
That's true.
And that's kind of where I'm just leaning.
Yeah, I don't think the only way I think that if Sean would finish Cheeto is in like a one, like some like walk off kind of KO where like, you know, he just hits him something perfect. Well,
if he were to KO Marlon Vera, I'd be really impressed.
That's what I'm saying.
Like,
I mean, I like Sean O'Malley. I'm not going to be mad if he wins.
But
with the fucking, if Corey Sandhagen couldn't finish fucking Cheeto in that fight, I don't know if Sean can. Like, the dude's a dog. And I do think it's a war of attrition also because I don't really know. Like, I guess in the Jan fight we saw O'Malley tested, but we really haven't seen O'Malley get tested into like a long 5-round fight. Like, he was in a 3-round fight with Pedro and he looked good. Or not Pedro, I'm sorry. Peter Jan. But, he looked good in that fight, but that was 3 rounds. So now you're in a 5-round scenario. And I think Cheeto Vera, one thing that a lot of people don't talk about is he's a real slow starter. He starts slow as fuck. Like, first, second round, he, at least in the 5-round fights he's had, because that's the real difference, I think, in this fight, too, is whereas Sean has literally had 1 5-round fight that went 1 round, whereas, like, Cheeto's main evented a lot of these fight night cards and been in these 5-round wars when they weren't title fights. And I think that could really be maybe a strength for him, that if he's able to, you know, dig deep and drive fucking O'Malley into those 4th and 5th rounds with a lot of like pressure that he, you know, just steadily keeps on him. Mm-hmm. I'd be very curious to see what it looks like, whether he'd fold or he'd be up to the occasion.
Yeah, we haven't really seen Sean tested that much yet. I mean, if you look at his record, it's just not there. I mean, his win against Sterling was really impressive.
Oh, yeah.
Then he was that super close fight against Peter Yan. Yeah. He had the no contest against Munoz, which was a close round. That shit was close. Like,
yeah, it was one of those fights. You
it's
know,
hard to tell. It was one round. There's nothing.
Yeah,
really
it was like when Leon fought fucking Bilal Muhammad. It was like, oh, a little quick stoppage that wasn't a stoppage and just ends up in a no contest.
But then look at the 2 wins before the Paiva. Who's that? Yeah. Moutinho? Yeah. Who? I mean, we bounce over here and we look at the last few fights for Cheeto Vera. I mean, yeah, he's got the loss to Sandhagen. Before that, he's on quite a streak. He wins over Edgar, wins over Font, wins over Cruz.
And the Edgar and Cruz finishes were fucking ridiculous.
And I just felt he had an off night against Corey Sandhagen. It happens, especially when you're on a streak like that. Sometimes you just fucking can't keep the streak up, man, and you just got to get that loss out, and then you're right back where you were before, and I feel like that's what's up with him. I'm feeling Cheeto this weekend, man.
Although, I'll say this. I wasn't super impressed with his fight against Munoz. I was really impressed with the Cruz Font and Frankie Edgar wins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that Pedro Munoz fight, he did look a bit, like, safe. And that could have been just because he knew he had to win that fight. But I'm real curious to see how this fight goes.
I don't think he's going to play it safe at all on this one. And I think as long as he is takes calculated risks, and he's careful with the pressure, it's good utilization of the teep kick. And then with his
jiu-jitsu, it's all about range with Sean too.
I think he's gonna fucking weather the storm and get the victory here. Cheeto Vera.
In what fashion?
Decision.
Damn, you think Cheeto Vera could win a decision against Sean?
Yeah, I do.
See, I think that'd be the last thing he wins by. I think he wins probably by either one of these guys probably wins by a finish. Because I think
I feel it. I see that's the logical choice. I hear it, but I'm just feeling it. I don't know. Feelings are always, I'm not putting my money on it.
So the only thing that. I would say in contrary to Cheeto possibly winning a decision is kind of what I was talking about before. I just feel like he starts slow, and if you start slow against someone like O'Malley, he's gonna try to empty the tank on you and get you out of there. And if Cheeto survives that storm, takes Sean to the deep water, I think he finishes him in the 4th.
Sean better hope that doesn't happen.
I think that's what happens. TKO 4th round.
So we're both feeling Cheeto this weekend.
Yeah, I'm taking Cheeto.
All right, word.
All right.
Let's move to the other big-ass fight.
Yeah. And literally, so the cool thing about this weekend is we get the Friday boxing and the Saturday MMA, so everybody's happy.
Francis Ngannou, round two, part two, dance number two, whatever you want to call it, dude, is playing with the house money on this one.
Hold on, you said his name wrong. You mean number 10 heavyweight in the world by the WBC, Francis Ngannou.
Right. Fighting for a title shot with a victory here against the winner of Usyk and fucking Fury.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if he actually gets that, though.
Well, first he'd have to get through Anthony Joshua, which is no easy task, but
yeah.
I feel that the Francis Ngannou that we saw in the fight against Tyson Fury can only be improved upon in the fight against Anthony Joshua. I don't think he goes backwards from there. I think he's got those first fight jitters out. I think he's got the confidence that he knows he can hang with these guys. And I think we're in for another shocking performance by Ngannou. I don't know if he can get a win, but if he loses, I feel it's going to be another razor thin. And I feel like he could knock him out. Yeah. I don't think that Anthony Joshua has the chin that Tyson Fury has.
Yeah. We've seen Joshua get dropped. We've seen Joshua get knocked out. So
right. And we saw one thing we knew about Fury was that he had an iron chin. He'll go down, but that motherfucker will get back up from death's touch.
Yeah.
So we kind of knew if Francis did get him, it would be unlikely to put him to sleep.
The only thing I'd say that could be the difference in this fight for Anthony Joshua is that Fury is a box-your-head-off kind of boxer, but I feel like AJ is more like kind of, like I've seen in his best performances, is kind of a little bit more calculated, and he's like real precise. Whereas, like, Fury mauls you and makes you look stupid. You know what I mean? Just that difference in style. Because, like, I think a big thing that was the reason Ngannou had such a close fight with Fury is he refused to let Fury physically, like, intimidate him in the clinch and up on the ropes and stuff like that. Where I just don't think Joshua is going to do that at all. Like, I don't see Joshua pushing Ngannou back and trying to tie up with him. I see him more as trying to sit back and try to knock him out. So, I don't know. I think this is just another case of, you know, Francis fighting someone that is just sounds so interesting for him to fight. You know what I mean? Like, everyone had said Fury and Ngannou was like, holy shit, like, that just sounds interesting. Like, I feel like this is just the next level for that.
I mean, I feel what you're saying. I like Ngannou's chances better in this one after seeing what he did against Fury, because no one was really expecting, at least that I knew of, expecting Fury to knock Ngannou out, but we all expected him to box him the fuck up.
Yeah.
And make him look kind of dumb.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have been shocked if Fury got out there and he'd embarrassed him, but the dude went to 10 rounds and been like, well, you did it, you know. Yeah. But instead he didn't box him up at all. The one who got boxed up actually was Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
And it wasn't some lucky shit. Like, Ngannou looked really good.
Yeah.
Like, remember how fucking fast he was, bro? Like, he was sandbagging us in those workout videos.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was lightning quick and his form was on point. That jab was just popping. His jab was popping. He was counterpunching a fucking way bigger dude who had reach on him.
Yeah.
I think he's going to come in and they're going to game plan that shit smart as fuck. And I think he's got a solid chance of winning this fight, dude. And it'll be the greatest sports story ever told.
I could rock with that, but I don't know. I want to believe your story. I just think Joshua's probably going to win.
It's the logical choice once again, but I'm going with emotions here. My whole thing with the UFC picks in this one, I'm just going on pure emotion.
Well, it'll be very exciting to the level of when he almost beat Fury too. Like if he beats Joshua, it's going to be wild. And I like a good crazy upset like that. But
bro, it'll set up the craziest showdown for all four belts in the history of boxing ever. That'll be the biggest fight ever.
PFL belt too.
And it'll be the craziest story. That's even bigger than the Rocky movies. Like that's Rocky times 10, bro. That's
so crazy. Here's my question to you though. So kind of going back a couple weeks ago, now we already know who Francis is fighting in the PFL next as well. So does that fight with the unification boxing match, does that happen before that PFL fight happens?
You know, there's one group of people that you would think would be Team Francis, but they're desperately hoping that he loses. And that is the PFL. Because if Francis Ngannou beats Anthony Joshua, that motherfucker ain't never going back to MMA, bro. He might go back to MMA in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? He is set up to make millions in boxing with a victory.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he... Millions, bro.
But
like,
the timeline still fits, though. The timeline still fits because no now with Joshua and Usyk... Or not Joshua and Usyk. Fury and Usyk being at... I think it's mid-May or something like that. If he comes out and knocks Joshua out, and then he goes in, knocks
yeah, then breaks
out
his
the
hand,
PFL.
Gets big dude in there or some shit.
Yeah, I don't know.
Fucks
though.
Up his knee, does some fucked up shit happens, and he loses his boxing paydays for some $2 million PFL payday. No shade on them.
That's 10.
Whatever. I don't know what the fuck it is, but it ain't gonna be what he would get with a win. Like, he's getting big bags right now. He got a big bag against Tyson. He's getting an even bigger bag here. If he wins, sky is the limit.
Yeah.
He's guaranteed a massive payday against Fury in a rematch. And then even if he loses there, he's guaranteed one more.
Yeah.
Like absolutely. Mm-hmm. That won't be the end of it. He'll have one more massive boxing payday. And if he were to win, I mean, no, that's crazy, but he'll never fight in MMA again if he were to fucking win all four heavyweight belts. Well, bye.
No. There'd like, be no reason to.
Why the fuck would you, bro? That'd be like, you already are the reigning UFC champ or the lineal UFC champion. Like, as much as I enjoyed that PFL versus Bellator event, and I'm on board with this whole thing, and I'm like, yeah, I fucking might even like this more than UFC, frankly, for the most part. Like,
yeah,
dude, come on, you
it's
don't.
Tough.
You
it's
don't.
A tough sell to go back to any kind of MMA after winning fucking four belts, dude.
So
nuts.
No, the boys over at the PFL are on Team Anthony Joshua privately. They're on Team Ngannou publicly,
but also I don't know.
Because, yeah, with a loss, he's going right back to MMA, bro. He's going to go beat that dude. He's going to go fight that big dude.
But
it'll be big, and it'll be fun. And boxing will have been this cool side hustle he made a bag off of and impressed us all with.
Yeah, that's true. I just feel like at the end of the day, he set himself up for his future, whether it goes either way. So, like, it really, like, he's playing with house money either way. You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
I feel like that's what happens when you get it, like, in a performance like he did against Fury. It's like you go out there and get your head boxed off. It is what it is. But if you go out there and you do it, you fucking accomplish the impossible, you're forever etched in stone in, like, history. Where, so, like, in that, just dare to be great, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of shit. That's kind of the same shit that Volk was trying to do. And as long as it's done right, like, and you give yourself the best shot possible, you can end up, you know, fucking doing some crazy shit. And I think that's what happened in the Fury fight too. Like, everybody counted him out, so he was just like, fuck it, dude, I'm just gonna go.
We've heard these MMA fighters say they can box before, and I don't give a fuck what any commentator says, what any ex-fighter says on any of these shows. What you see these guys do in the UFC does not mean they can go into a boxing ring and have any type of fucking success. Nate Diaz is a great puncher in MMA. He looked like shit against Jake Paul. Sorry, it was terrible. He looked like a fucking joke, dude. Like, Tyrone Woodley did all right when he chose to punch in MMA. It was terrible. Terrible in fucking boxing. Like,
for real.
Like, it doesn't translate. Francis clearly can box. He wasn't joking when he was like, no, I've been trying to box this whole time. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Conor could actually box a little bit. It's like, okay, you can box a little here.
Pettis was pretty solid, too.
Pettis, yeah, I mean, he beat fucking Roy Jones. Pettis came out and showed he could box a bit, too. It's not everybody, but a lot of them, it just don't translate.
Well, that's the thing, though, too, is if you look at all these guys, though, that the striking side of things has always been their background. Like, Francis, although he went straight into MMA, he said, like, all he really wanted to do was train boxing. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Is it,
and that's kind of how he's
training on his own and doing whatever he was doing, it was for boxing shit. He wasn't sprawling and learning fucking wrestling.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, his wrestling is a very new skill of his arsenal. It
right,
was like,
exactly.
Not until Stipe embarrassed him did he learn how to wrestle. He was just knocking motherfuckers dead. And that's the ultimate equalizer in this fight, too, is Francis' ability to fucking knock. But AJ does hit hard, too, though. AJ's got some pop in his...
Yeah, what's he got, like 20 out of 22 victories or by knockout?
Something like that.
21 to 23, something like that.
Yeah, but so Francis has got to be careful with that too, because I do think in that Fury fight also, we didn't really see Fury ever pop him. And I'd be very curious to see what it looks like if he got rocked by either Fury or Joshua, and how he would handle that, you know.
Well, I'm sticking with it. I'm picking fucking Ngannou with a KO.
I love Ngannou, but I'm taking Joshua.
We'll see.
I'm taking what my brain is saying.
It's going to be a fun fucking show next week if he wins.
But my brain is like, bro, come on. What are we doing here?
I feel you.
Well, I think that about wraps our show up for today.
Yep. Looking forward to next week, seeing how this all turns out. It's going to be an exciting time. Good weekend in sports here.
Hell yeah.
All right, catch you all next week, everybody.
Peace.
Later.